Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap Podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Luck for Ferrari, bad luck for Haas. Today we review the Australian GP, the first race of the 2018 season. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fogel. Hello everyone to episode 82 of the Fastest Lap Podcast. The first race is over and it was surprisingly similar to last year. Not many overtakes and Ferrari jumping Mercedes due to strategy and, well, this year of course with a bit of luck. So yeah, let's start this episode by looking at quali first. After the first runs in Q3, I was really excited to see three teams within 2 or 3 tenths. But yeah, worryingly, in the end, Hamilton finished 7 tenths ahead of everyone. So what did you make of quali, Fergal?
Yeah, it was the same. I mean, after the first run, there was 6 hundredths of a second separating Hamilton, Vettel and Verstappen. And that was very, very exciting. And I think we all sort of thought that we were in for a really close battle. Mm-hmm. And then Hamilton went on his second run, and I think in the first sector alone he made up like 4 tenths of a second, which is pretty incredible. And then even in that same session at the start, the session we had a pretty big crash for Bottas, and yeah, that was an error, I guess, from Bottas, and it was quite a hefty one too, and I think, you know, Bottas is only under contract until the end of this year, and that's not really going to boost Mercedes with much confidence, and he of course got a grid penalty with that and had to start the race from P15, but it was a fairly big impact with the barrier.
And it didn't boost Bottas's confidence either. You know, he has been under pressure for basically all of last season already, but this season especially, as you said, his contract is running out at the end of this year, and after that qualifying result, and well, we'll talk about that later with that race result, he is already quite on the back foot here, and yeah, the pressure will rise throughout the season, I think. But with Hamilton, are you actually believing his words that they didn't use any special engine modes and that it was just a very, very good lap and so on? Do you think that it was really just that, or did they sandbag before?
I think that they used the same engine mode that they have been using for the past couple of years. I don't think there was anything particularly special about what was used in Q3. I think that the Mercedes simply just turned up the engines like they have done in recent years, but perhaps this time around it's just a much bigger boost this time. I mean, we know that Mercedes have had the most efficient power unit since the hybrid era began in 2014. Toto Wolff did say that Hamilton did use a power boost, but he said he used it in his first quali run as well, as in his first lap in Q3, he used that as well. So he used the boost as well. So, I mean, looking at the onboard of Hamilton's lap, it was a pretty incredible lap. The speed that he was carrying into some of the corners were pretty. It's pretty incredible, and the car just looked very, very stable. We already know Hamilton, how good he is at qualifying. He holds the record for the most pole positions. So, I do think his driving style contributed quite a bit to that lap time.
Yeah, I mean, when you do the the F1 time trial, for example, in the simulation. Of course, it's quite a different thing, but when you are close to the limit, yes, maybe if you do really get a good lap together, then there's 1/10 or 2/10 in it, and well, maybe if it's a really, really, really good lap, you can improve 3/10 on whatever you did before. But Hamilton improved 8/10, and I just cannot believe that he ran on the limit the lap before, and then just was able to improve 8/10. For me, that's pretty unrealistic. So either he didn't really give the full 100% and wanted to get a banker lap in, which I think is the reason why the first lap wasn't maybe as spectacular as the second. But I mean, 8/10, it's basically a different car.
Yeah, well, it was 6/10, I believe. His lap time was 8/10 faster than Raikkonen, but then Raikkonen pulled back 2/10.
I meant comparing to his first run. I think Hamilton improved 8 or a more 10th compared to his first run.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll never, well, unless we get some confirmation by some team data or something, I don't know. Yeah. I guess we'll never really know, but well, I can't really imagine Mercedes would be leaking or giving out any of their quality information. But nevertheless, I mean, you can't really take anything away from Hamilton from
that. I don't want to do that. Just I couldn't believe it's just like, oh, I got a perfect lap together, 8/10 quicker. You know, that's, in my opinion, not how it works.
I mean, it's a lot of time. It is definitely a lot of time. But as I've already said, we know how good Hamilton is at qualifying.
Yes.
In my opinion, he's probably the greatest of all time, or he's definitely up there. Yeah, I mean, definitely just a really, really incredible qualifying session for him all around.
Absolutely. And maybe before we go into the race itself, looking on the TV overlay and the new F1 theme they presented before the race. We talked about it a little bit. You said you didn't like the music at all, but what do you think now, integrated with the intro and everything else? Do you think it works?
Definitely
for
a bit better.
When
I first heard the theme song, you know, I was just listening to a YouTube video, and you know, I had no visual to go with it, but definitely when you put it alongside some F1 action, it is quite it does look quite good and sound quite good. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's really that bad at all. I think I am sort of gonna miss the intro we used to have for the last few years. That was definitely a bit that was sort of the moment, you know, where the transition between the pre-race show and then getting down to business. But I mean, I'm sure that I'll get used to this one just as quickly, and it actually does sound good and look good. So yeah, I don't really have any complaints on that end.
I agree. I like the new one as well. Of course, as you said, it's sad to see the old one go, but well, sometimes it's just time for change. And the intro is new, the song is new, but also the TV overlay is new. And I have to say, I was a little bit worried when I saw some drafts in the winter break where some of the overlay graphics didn't look good at all. But what they presented here in Melbourne, I have to say,
it does look pretty good. There's definitely some things that I can improve on. For example, I don't really see the need for the team logo beside the driver's name.
Tire status would be better.
Tire that they set their fastest lap on, maybe. Also, when they show the driver number, it sort of is covered. Depending on the background, the driver number sort of gets covered a little bit and you can't see it at all. Again, though, I don't really think that's a necessary feature. And then we had that on the Friday practice, we had that really, really annoying sound when they went to a replay. And thankfully, they scrapped that very quickly. It no longer featured on Saturday. I'm not gonna lie, I don't even remember exactly what the sound was, but I just remember it being very, very annoying.
It wasn't.
It didn't really look. It doesn't. The overlay doesn't look that bad at all, really. Like you said, when we seen some of the drafts over the winter, I got a little bit worried. But it does look. It does look pretty good. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and today we got last name versus last name also. Yeah, so still a little bit of work to do within your graphics. But yeah, so let's go into the race. We had, as we talked about, Hamilton in P1, Kimi starting alongside him, Vettel third. Verstappen not maybe with the position he wanted, but it didn't get better after the start.
Yeah, after the start he got overtaken by Magnussen around the outside. It was kind of his own fault, I think, that he got overtaken.
But it was a good move by Magnussen to see that the racing line is
yeah it was very good
to use
move by Magnussen. Verstappen went for a little look down the inside of a Ferrari and sort of compromised his entry, which allowed Magnussen to swoop around the outside. And then, keeping on the topic of Verstappen, it just got a little bit frustrating for him after that. He was trying to push, but his rear tires were overheating, and you could see multiple times he was just getting out of shape, coming out of corners, and the car really looked like a handful to drive. And eventually, he...
I think we learned.
Something broke off the car or something.
Problem with his underfloor.
And then he spun. He spun at the first corner, and it was pretty lucky. I think that it was just a 360, and he was able to get going again because we know. Bottas crashed out heavily.
Well held.
At that point yesterday, I know it was a very different crash to Bottas because Bottas ran a bit wide, but Verstappen was pretty much losing the rear as he was turning into the corner. So, that was definitely not a good time of the race for Verstappen.
But the position itself improved later on. You already said Magnussen had a very good start. Sooner rather than later. Also, Grosjean wasn't a good position. I'm not sure. Did Grosjean also make places?
Yeah, Grosjean got by Verstappen, didn't he? Yeah, because Grosjean was behind Verstappen, and so yeah, I don't think he made after the spin. He went through
after the
so
spin.
So I think at that point of the race, it was pretty encouraging to see. Yes. The Haas cars, it was kind of strange to see both of them up there in P4 and P5, and it kind of just goes to show that the Haas cars this year are definitely on the pace. I'm not sure how long that will last with the likes of, you would imagine that Renault and McLaren are going to develop their cars a lot quicker than Haas because they have a bigger budget and everything. So, it was really nice to see them up there.
Yeah, and especially that point you just raised will hurt them even more today. They were in such good positions, and then, and as you said, we might not see them up again in those positions if other teams outdevelop them. And today they threw it away basically with just one action, which is the pit stop. So. Do we already know what happened?
It's very strange.
Seems like the wheel gun problem.
Well, it's very rare that kind of thing happens anyway in a race. and to a team. I mean, teams practice pit stops the whole time throughout a weekend, you know, hundreds of times, making sure that they get it, you know, as perfect as they can. And then to have two failed pit stops like that in a row is just basically unheard of. And you got to feel sorry for the guys. I mean, you could see the images that they showed. The pit crew were clearly distraught with what had happened. And there was actually a really nice image that I saw there a few minutes ago of Grosjean consoling the one of the pit crew, I think one of the guys that had the wheel gun. So I do just feel really, really sorry for those guys, because I think if they had been able to continue on, I imagine that they would have been able to finish in P4 and P5, which would have put them in third in the championship after the race, which would have been amazing. But yeah, I mean, that sort of thing just happens. Well, not really, but that sort of thing doesn't happen. But you know, the race can sometimes just get away from you at times, and it was just really, really unfortunate that it happened for both Haas cars today.
Yeah, and for both, I mean, we had basically two failures within one pit stop, each of the pit stops. First, the wheel gun failed, and then the process failed that should keep the car in the pit lane without releasing it. You know, but both of those systems, those processes failed, and yeah, that meant that first of all, Kevin Magnussen had to retire. Well, he could park the car in a safe place, but then also Grosjean needed to retire, which meant, of course, that a virtual safety car got deployed, and that had huge impacts on the race. Of course, Hamilton was leading the race quite comfortably in front. Kimi not really having the pace to attack him; he was always kind of 2 or 3 seconds behind. Then Ferrari decided, well, let's get Kimi in. Maybe we can undercut Hamilton if he stays out. But Mercedes covered that. And I mean, there's some kind of always those stories like, Ferrari wants Vettel to win, and that's why they chose that strategy. But in my opinion, that's rubbish. They couldn't know that a virtual safety car was on the horizon. So they just tried something else. Whether it worked or not, they didn't know. And if it hadn't worked, well, Vettel would have been P3. And well, now it works, so it looks quite good. But yeah, obviously, the virtual safety car changed everything. And I also don't get all the talk about, oh, a virtual safety car should neutralize the field. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's just a thing that happens in racing. You know? This virtual safety car, there was questions raised about on commentary on whether the virtual safety car should stop cars from entering the pit lane. But you know, what if a car has damage and needs to come back into the pit lane for repairs? You know, it just doesn't make sense. And I think for us, it excites the spectacle. Well, not if you're a fan of the the driver that's on the losing side, but it does really excite the
yeah, and the thing I think that is important to stress here is the virtual safety car is not to neutralize the field to keep everyone in the position he was or he is. The main thing why the virtual safety car was deployed or was created is that they can get rid of a car on track or of debris without putting out the normal safety car. So it's therefore
put in place
safety
after
Jules
Bianchi's accident back in 2014. That's kind of the where it spread from.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people with, you know, as well, with you know, tinfoil hats on, saying that, oh, Haas is basically a customer Ferrari team, so maybe they did it on purpose to allow Ferrari to win, which, I mean, is probably one of the most ridiculous accusations I think I've ever heard in Formula One. But yeah, I mean, it happened last year, you could argue, at the Spanish Grand Prix. Vettel had a lead and he came into the pits. There was a virtual safety car when Van Dorn and Massa came together, and he came into the pits right when the virtual safety car was ending, which meant Hamilton could get back up to speed, and it allowed Hamilton to close in, and that's when they went wheel to wheel at the first corner, and Hamilton was bumped wide a bit, but he eventually overtook him. But yeah, I mean, there was no complaints about the safety car, the virtual safety car, then, when it had a big impact on the race. I think people were maybe just a bit more annoyed this time around because the actual overtake happened while the virtual safety car was in effect. But me personally, I mean, I don't really see any issue. It's just it's part of the racing now. We know how much strategy is you know, important to a race, and I think perhaps maybe if Hamilton had won that race, that I think we might have got a lot of comments in turn saying, oh, it's going to be a boring season, Mercedes are going to win every race. So yeah, you just can't really win in that situation. But it's just an added I guess part of strategy now, this virtual safety car and safety cars in general. So I don't really have a problem with it at all.
And it's not really like the VC deployment was the problem itself. The problem was that Mercedes calculations were wrong. You know, it seemed like Hamilton could have gone quicker, and then I think the gap after the pit stop was like 1.5 seconds or something like that. And if he had pushed in the, I don't know how many laps Vettel was out after, or was stayed out longer compared to Hamilton, but I mean, I would guess Hamilton on fresh tires versus Vettel on used tires, it would have been quite easy to build up the gap. So it was not only the virtual safety car itself, it was also miscalculation.
I don't really see it like that.
Mercedes,
I don't buy into that miscalculation by Mercedes. I think it was just a look at a draw by Ferrari that a virtual safety car came. I mean, Ferrari were hoping for the virtual safety car. That's why Vettel stayed out a little bit longer, in the hope, as you already mentioned a few minutes ago, in the hope that something could have happened, and if something did happen, they would gain from it. And if there was no safety car, well, then he would just file back into P3 where he already was. So I think Ferrari just got lucky. I don't really think Mercedes could have done anything at all, because once a virtual safety car comes out, you're basically fixed in place and you can't really make any improvements. You can't make any inroads. You can't have any effect on your competitors that are heading into the pit lane.
Yeah, Hamilton pitted like what, 5, 6 laps earlier?
Hamilton pitted on, do you know the lap exact number? 19, and then Vettel pitted on lap 26. So about seven laps of a difference.
Yeah, seven laps. So 7 laps. Hamilton had fresh air, and was able, or he managed the pace basically. He got told he needs to do 120 something, and he did that. If Mercedes had known that the gap for a virtual safety car was not big enough, I assure you they would have told Hamilton, okay, we need a quicker laps, 120 something, and then the gap on lap 26 would have been like, I don't know, maybe 17 seconds, not 15 seconds or whatever. And that's what I mean, that was the part of the race where Mercedes made an error.
That's really it then. You know, you gotta, if you're using that argument, you gotta kind of question Mercedes' tactics and their naivety to the fact that a safety car or a virtual safety car could emerge.
Well, they said actually that they had a problem with their software and that it didn't show the VSC delta correctly.
You know, I think at the end of the day, Vettel, like for the most part, and Ferrari did get a bit lucky with the timing of it. But you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, today's victory of Vettel was pure luck. On raw pace, it wasn't really possible for Ferrari or for Vettel to get by the Mercedes. I mean, we saw it in qualifying how dominant the Mercedes was, and I guess that if Hamilton or if the track wasn't Australia, but maybe some other kind of track where you can overtake more easily, I guarantee.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Hamilton would have won.
I guess. Who knows? Maybe we'll be in that situation sometime further in the season.
Yeah, but talking about overtaking, I mean, we saw it already last year. Australia, Melbourne isn't really the best track for overtaking. I think last year we had like one overtake or something. This year we had a few more. Out of my head, I can't remember the great move by Daniel Ricciardo on Renault Hülkenberg. Yeah, Hülkenberg. That was really good. Also, Bottas needed to make some overtakes after he started quite far down the grid. But yeah, all in all, Australia is not really good for overtaking, and I think keeping that in mind, the crash of Bottas in qualifying
hurt him even more. Albert Park definitely isn't a track where you're going to get a lot of overtaking anyway, and I think I read somewhere that in the opening 10 laps of the race there was already more overtakes than the whole race of last year. It might have even been less than 10, but there wasn't really that many overtakes, but I think overall it was a pretty decent race. It was kind of, there was always something sort of happening to talk about and to think about, and I think it definitely was a much better race than last year. There was a bit more action, but yeah, with, I don't know, I am a little bit worried, you know, with the aero rules. The cars are only going to get faster and faster as the aero develops more and more, and overtaking is just going to become even more difficult over the next couple of years. And I really hope in 2021, when we're going to have the new engine regulations, I imagine that they're going to have a redesign in aero regulations as well, and I just hope that some sort of solution definitely 100% needs to be thought of, because I think by 2021, when we have another 2 years of developing aero, I mean, you really gotta wonder how much overtaking will there be when we get to the end of 2020.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at the lap times, you might think, well, they're a few, I can't quite remember how much quicker they were, like a second maybe quicker compared to last year. You might say, well, yeah, good aero development, good job. But thinking about it, or thinking about the new engine rules and that the engine needs to be much more reliable this season, you could argue that the aero development from last year to this year was even bigger, because I'm not quite sure whether they did use
That's another thing that's probably going to have a big bearing on the season ahead, is the engine. We know there is 6 components to a power unit, and there's 3 MGUHs, MGUKs and internal combustion engines that they're allowed, and then all the other parts, they only are allowed 2. And actually, that's a Valtteri Bottas was fitted with his second control electronics and energy store, and you're only allowed 2 of them throughout the whole season, and he's already on a second one. So yeah, that's a bit of a worry. I think the ones that were replaced after his crash, they might be okay. They were just taken out as a precaution, but yeah, I think there's going to be big controversies towards the end of the season when we're getting lots and lots of grid penalties, because they're definitely coming this year. If you thought they were bad enough last year, they're going to be a lot worse this year.
Yeah, talking.
Yeah.
Where was it? In Monza, where basically half the grid had grid penalties. Well, looking forward to that. Yeah, but talking of engine power unit and grid penalties, Honda. It was a horror show, basically, for Toro Rosso Honda. In qualifying, they were quite below what I expected. And also in the race, they were nowhere, you know, just at the back of the field. Yeah, I mean, I think Hartley damaged something on his car or had a flat spot in the first couple of laps, but still, pace wasn't good. And then already in race one, Gasly has an engine failure. Pooh, I mean,
yeah, it looked much better in testing. It was a bit disappointing today from Toro Rosso. I believe Hartley was the only driver actually to finish a lap down, and that was after he had unlapped himself in the safety car period. Mm-hmm. So, and then Gasly as well. He qualified right at the back of the grid. He was the 20th, and then he had engine failure or some sort of engine issue. I didn't follow up on that, if it was actually an engine failure. Did you? Oh, was it? Yeah.
It was an engine failure.
Yeah, it's a bit worrying. Am I surprised? Honestly, yeah, a little bit, because they were looking quite good after preseason testing, and even throughout the weekend in practice, they were looking all right. So, maybe, you know, Hartley and Gasly have never driven Albert Park before. Maybe that had something to do with it. I think we're in Bahrain next, so at least Hartley has good World Endurance Championship experience there. Bahrain has featured in the World Endurance Championship. So, we'll wait a couple of more races, I think, before we get a full picture of where Toro Rosso and Honda are. But yeah, certainly in the first race, it wasn't looking very good.
Yeah, and also not a very good race for Williams, finishing outside of the points. So we had some really good performances, some not so good performances in the first race of the season. But you already said that it wasn't the best race, it wasn't the worst race. And for this year, we will introduce race rating system, basically to rate or to rank the races in terms of excitement, how much action there was going on. Was the race boring? Was it deciding for the championship, whatever? So we'll score every race, and you can check out all our race scores and also our podium predictions on our website. It's fastestlappodcast.com/stats. So fastestlappodcast.com/stats. And you can also find our podium predictions there. We were again completely wrong in last year's episode. I think only you, Fogel, had correct position, which was Hamilton in second. But all the other positions were wrong as usual. But yeah, let's talk about the race itself then. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most exciting race ever, and one being like, I don't know, maybe Australia last season. What would you, or how would you?
It's kind of hard to come up with Australian a number, because GP. I have nothing really to base it off and compare it to. Like I said, there wasn't that much on track action. There was some cars following each other for quite a while, but there was no real, you know, side by side battles. But then again, I was pretty entertained throughout the race. So I think I think it's kind of only fair for the first race to sort of just go halfway and give it a 5 out of 10 for the...
Really? Five for me is like an average Formula One race where you are quite entertained, yeah. Some overtakes, different strategies. And Australia, for me, there was only one strategy, I mean, like I said, not many overtakes.
Oh, really? I didn't think it was that bad. Now, I mean, like I said, there was definitely. I was always thinking about something during the race that was happening. You know, I was kept entertained, I think, pretty much throughout the whole 58 laps or 50. How many laps is there? 56. Yeah. I mean,
something.
I was definitely always entertained. So I think it's kind of only. It doesn't really feel right for me to give a something as low as a 3. So I think, yeah, not really having anything to base it off and compare it to, I would just probably.
Let's go for 4.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
Not quite the average F1 race. I think the average F1 race is better, but it's not as bad as a 3. Yes, so let's give it a 4. Maybe we'll see how that rating pans out throughout the season. Maybe we see, oh, there are some quite entertaining races. Maybe there are some more boring races. We'll see about that. But driver of the weekend also an interesting choice. Maybe Alonso, I think, got driver of the day in the official Formula One vote. Would you agree on that? Also for driver of the weekend?
Driver of the day, qualifying? Yeah, I mean, Alonso did a pretty good job during the race, started P10, perhaps was helped a little bit by retirements of other drivers and whatnot, but, you know, you can't really... Yeah, that too, you know, but you can't really...
Virtual safety car.
Yeah, I don't really see that as an excuse because that's racing. But no, that would not be my driver of the weekend. And I think perhaps maybe it might... my choice might surprise you because my driver of the weekend is actually a driver that didn't even finish the race but performed very, very well in qualifying. I kind of just feel like I want to pick Kevin Magnussen for this, for my first driver of the weekend. Of the season, I think in qualifying, you know, he did a great job. He was basically the driver that was best of the rest. He was behind the two Ferraris, the two Red Bulls, and the one Mercedes because Bottas had crashed out. I mean, he got the better of his teammate Grosjean and both Renaults and of course both McLarens. So I think Magnussen did a great job, and he was performing really, really well in the race. Unfortunately, he had to retire. Through no fault of his own, and I was really, really impressed by him. For me, my driver of the weekend is Kevin Magnussen.
Interesting. Yeah, for me, there were a lot of good performances throughout the weekend. I mean, we talked about it already. Hamilton, really great qualifying, also in the race. He didn't do anything wrong. He tried to fight his way back to P1. Which wasn't possible in Australia. So he had a very good weekend, as you said. Magnussen, but also Grosjean, both good weekends. But yeah, Magnussen with a great qualifying as well. Then we have also Charles Leclerc, I have to say. I'm a little bit of a fan looking back at his GP2 season last year. And I have to say, for his first Formula One weekend to finish less than a tenth behind his much more experienced teammate, Marcus Ericsson, was a really good job in my opinion. Also in the race, he finished ahead of a Williams, he finished ahead of Toro Rosso. Sure, the Sauber isn't the quickest car at the moment, but all in all, I'd say a good performance by him. But yeah, all in all, I think you really have to say that Magnussen did stand out a bit more compared to all the other drivers. So I agree. Let's go for Magnussen as driver of the weekend. So did you see Charles Leclerc's first weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
positive takeaway.
He did pretty well in qualifying for what it's worth in that Sauber. It does look like a very difficult car to drive. He got within a tenth of around a tenth of behind Ericsson, and then in the race kept out of trouble, finished ahead of Stroll. I think Stroll had some power issues throughout the race, he's this year is going to be all about building up building experience, and I know it's very early yet, and there's lots of talk about perhaps Leclerc to Ferrari in 2019. I personally don't really see it happening, but you know, it's very, very early in the season yet to focus on that. So but I think he can be pretty happy with himself after his first weekend.
Yes, absolutely. So the next race in Bahrain will be on the 8th, right? In 2 weeks? Yeah, in 2 weeks. So next week we will definitely preview that race. Bahrain, of course, a power-dependent racetrack, so might be a good track for Mercedes again, but we'll talk more about that next week. But maybe also we do get some more news from Australia and from the time in between. But for this week, I can only say thank you very much for listening. And yeah, maybe you are a bit tired as well, as probably we are, as we had to get up quite early this weekend for practice, quali and race. So until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.